Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Deep Thoughts. I'm contemplating what to do today. I still have like 4 episodes in the queue at all times. I want to cover dreams. I want to call this episode The Geography of Your Dreams, or Geography of Dreams. Geography, the study of locations. Not to be confused with geologists, right? I don't think too many of us get to take soil samples in our dreams. Here's what I've come to notice. I will have dreams in a particular location, meaning the place where I start my dream, and the buildings and the streets, or... Well, when I say buildings, the buildings are actually big. They're big, giant places that we sort of live inside of. But then we go outside, too. It's not like we're stuck in some giant skyscraper permanently. These locations will seem to last about 1 to 2 weeks. And it's almost as if, for myself, they tend to run dry of experiences, of people. And before I go to bed, after 1 or 2 of the particular location, I will say to God, let's have a change of venue. Let's change it. Or any spirits that are listening to me who may contribute to such a thing. Now, a psychiatrist or psychologist might laugh and say, oh, you're just talking to your id and you're the one making the change. What's fascinating is as I was younger, you know, after I got through the nightmare phase that I've discussed several times, the nightmare phase was just me in my bedroom constantly, just bedroom, 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 all kinds of weird shit happening. And what was funny is even in the nightmare era of my childhood, other than a couple times where the room was just as dark as it was when I went to bed, my brain just copied and pasted it into my dream. My toys were always sort of coming after me on the ground. And again, they never touched me. They just were coming at me. If I look over the bed, I have this one vision of looking over the bed, and it's probably definitely prior to Close Encounters of the Third Kind, for sure. Because that was 78, and I was having these dreams at about 73, 74. But they came at me a couple times, and I never had that one again. And then the reoccurring nightmare that I had from, I don't know, God knows when, till about 7. My room looked really cool. That's the weird thing. It's just this crazy mannequin broad creating an impossible scenario for me to escape from without hurting your feelings or whatever. But I really want to focus on now. Because I think in the past, my dreams have been fairly scattered. I didn't have reoccurring places, at least in a row. Now, there are places that I'll give you an address. This will be fun for any of you who want to just pull up a web browser and go to Google Maps. Search on 601 North Grant, Chanute, Kansas, Chanute, Kansas, 66720. That was my uncle's old house. My house was two houses down at 617 North Grant. That's where I used to live. And they're just little Kansas homes, right? But the three-story thing, or it's really two-story, I should say, but it has this weird kind of attic at the top of it, and all those houses have basements, because that's just how they were built. But my brain, at one point, at the 601 North Grant location, which I think a buddy of mine owns that now, at one point in my dream, I went up there. This is like 20, 30 years ago. Got up there, and there was a secret fourth floor that was actually the floor that had the slanted ceilings due to the rooftop. And that actually exists in it's a big attic. I mean, you can sit around I think you can walk fully upright in that attic for most of its, floor space. And I think that, it was probably meant to be built out and just no one did it. It's an old-fashioned attic, just like you see in Hollywood. My hometown's a great place. If Hollywood just ever discovered it, the amount of movies they could shoot there would just be off the chain for every type of nook and cranny type story they want to tell, you know? I wrote my first film to be set there. So every 5 to 10 years, I would go back to that location at 601 North Grand. I'd be in that fourth story, and it was beautiful. It was sort of like a teleportation from a nice manor house. It would be like a really quaint little study from like a British manor house or something, some little Downton Abbey attic. With little, you know, the Rolodex top desk with all these little nooks and crannies, like, you know, stopwatches and shit, right? There is a dream I had where just going to cover a couple reoccurring places. There was a big place that kind of looked like an airport outside where normally you'd have hangars, but these were like department stores sort of things. There's like three or four of them. I only go in the very first one. The first one, you go inside and it's this unbelievable Art Deco looking smooth interior. It's kind of a bluish interior. It had these gigantic escalators that took you up, and they were like bizarrely extra wide, like a double wide escalator taking me up. And I dreamed this when I was a little kid. And then you had to kind of get up. You go way up, probably 25, 30 feet, and then you kind of have to take another little escalator up to the next side. But it was a movie theater. And it seemed like the escalators kept getting tighter and tighter and tighter. The more you went up, the smaller they got, and you were sort of going into this bizarre location, a bit like when Willy Wonka lets him into the big factory room. And so the movie theater up top sort of loses a bit of its Art Deco-ness, and there's like four or five theaters joined by this, you know, red shag carpet, and, you know, got the concession over here, the bathroom over here, and there's like 1, 2, 3. And then when you go into these theaters, they're bizarrely flat. They're not like, you know, amphitheater-looking locations. It was sort of flat, and then it sort of looked like, you know, if you've ever seen the old concerts that the TV concerts Stevie Ray Vaughan did back in the day in Texas, sort of like that kind of thing, but times maybe 5 in size. But what I want to get at with this episode is about you studying your geography in your dreams. How much does it repeat? Does it repeat day to day? Like I said, for me, it's repeating for a week to 2 weeks. And they are, I wouldn't say they're super realistic. I mean, they are and they aren't. You know, it is a very vivid, convincing world for dream world. Every once in a while, I have a dream where the dream is starting to match reality, and that is extremely rare. But when it happens, it really leaves you with a huge smile when you wake up in the morning, because you're like, oh my God, it's like I had an out-of-body experience and I went to this location. But the rules never really jive. I mean, I've only had a couple of dreams that really jive with reality, in that the constraints I have in this world are the constraints I had in the dream world. I had a dream once where I went into a tourist location. I think I might have mentioned this in a previous dream episode a million years ago, but it was this, I didn't have a chance to talk to anybody. I was with a girl, and I think it was a girl in real life, but I can't quite remember. But we were going, yeah, it actually was a friend of mine. I've never met her face to face. We're very good friends online. But we were going down inside this sort of cut stone, I don't want to say cavern because it's not, it's all man-made, but it was some ancient culture that had cut deep into this, I don't know, it was like a brown stone. It was very beautiful. It was sort of like a mix between granite and like bird's eye maple wood. It was like a brownish, a light brownish thing, but it was very angled and it was just monolithic. It was gigantic, and you would just follow it down, go in, and you're kind of looking around. It's sort of like if you were to go into some alien world. And so, you know, no one's there. There's no artifacts or anything. I think perhaps there was a little bit of writing on the walls that we were kind of looking at, but it was just a tourist thing. It was just, we walked down in there and that was it. And we're all kind of quiet because we're marveling over this. We're having little small talk conversations about, oh my God, look how big that is. This is huge. This is crazy. This is insane. That particular dream had a lot of realism to it because, one, it was broad daylight. And as you went down into this cut out artifact place, it was just, you started losing your light, but, you know, it was all daylight outside. So just, you lose about 25, 50% of your light going down in this thing. It's never dark or anything. It's all open to the sky. Now, we've talked about so many things in the dream episodes. I think for me, the reason why the geography of your dream is so profound is it tends to dictate the action that can occur inside the dream. And so we don't typically parse things like that in the kind of Freudian conversations that I have read. I used to have 2 or 3 books, I think I've dominated them by now, that were just dream analysis books by either Freud himself or disciples of his, with another book that was loosely sourced, and you would just literally look up nouns and they would tell you things, and it was silly. But now what's interesting is that obviously a lot of us assume, because there are contextual examples in dreams, that we are crafting these things in part. What is still phenomenal for the mind, phenomenal for us in the outside, in this particular popular reality, is that, again, once we go inside of a dream, there, you know, if you were to turn one of your dreams into a movie on the outside, you know for a fact that it would take you millions and millions of dollars, and you would need designers, and you would have to do like these, especially if you're not an artist. I am an artist, and I would tell you, it would take me just for the one I just told you about, going down into the alien cavern thing. That one's pretty simple. It's a short dream to begin with. I could model it in Blender 3D fairly quickly, kind of get an approximation of what it was like. But, you know, I'd need a massive plug-in in Maya to get the whole crowd right, or we'd have to hire a bunch of extras and shoot some blue screen crap and composite it together. You are doing an amazing amount of brilliant work inside your dreams, regardless of what your talents are. And to think, if you go back to your childhood and you think about the fact that you've had amazing dreams, like even a nightmare, who cares? You are thinking that up, at least in part. But now, if we go an extra step and go ahead and introduce into this equation a variable that could be, this is the state that we get to be in when we're not inside of our bodies. Doesn't a good dream feel good when you wake up? And a good dream, we're making a distinction. It's not a great dream. It's not a bad dream. It's a good dream. You sort of feel like you slept better in some cases. If you have a frustrating dream, I think that's when you wake up and you feel like you didn't sleep and it sucks. If you have a terrifying dream, oh God, your sleep is completely messed up. You're waking up, you got to turn the light on or whatever you got to do, read through your phone. But again, for those of you who are new to the dream series on this show, the big question we keep asking is, why do we have to sleep every single day? You have been told a million reasons why this is the case, from bio clocks, you know, we get jet lag, it's pretty evident, we're plugged into the ecosystem of the sun as it comes around, but some of you work night shifts, and so you're constantly backwards to everybody else. Some of you are just night owls. Some of you are mega early birds, you're getting up at 3:30 and then you're dead by 7 o'clock. But for whatever reason, all beings on Earth must sleep. Nothing gets to be awake 24/7, except for maybe a gnat, you know, certain type of insects that just work until they die, because they have super short lifespans. The birds sleep, cows sleep, horses sleep, fish, well, They have their methods. But we all have to relax. And then you just look at a cat or a dog. They shake their little legs. You know, they're dreaming about running and jumping. And you hear them whine in their sleep. They're having a full-on dream. It's the cutest thing in the world when you see it. We're all sort of getting a break from this reality. Perhaps, again, we're getting an update of our code. A little Westworld thing. A Dark City thing. Luckily, we're not getting swapped. But we are getting, potentially, a chance to wake up someplace else. Like in my episode, Dreamscaping. When I request a new environment to dream inside of, it shows up. It's really quite amazing, and I really try to exhaust the one that I have because I consider each one of these locations, and this is just my silly little notion on top of the work that's been put into it. You know, I feel as if there is a crew. It's probably not true. It probably, if it is, it's not a lot of labor for them. Who knows? Again, it's just like the movie Forbidden Planet, where the aliens that are long gone, the Krill, had built a machine such that whatever they could imagine would appear in the universe. If we ever embraced ethereal winds and figured out what, you know, how to manipulate them into the best supersonic 3D printers you've ever heard or ever seen in your life, there would be nothing that we couldn't print into reality by simply magnetically controlling the ethereal winds to bond in a particular way, I'm assuming. You know, and let me just take that down one digression for a second so you can understand that just a little bit better. You know that if you have a headset, a wired headset, and it's beautifully, you know, it's not tangled on itself, and you then, especially the Apple ones, which are just, you know, just butter, they're beautiful, right? You can control that Y, you know, there's two things for your ears and goes down to the plug. You can control that thing pretty damn easily. You can make all kinds of little spaghetti shapes out of it. But the second you put it inside your purse, your backpack, whatever, a drawer, and that damn thing gets tangled up, and then you're trying to untangle it to get the phone call started, it is murder to get that thing undone. Well, I want you to think of that analogy as ethereal winds that are very loose and particly, just like water. And when they come together into a vortex and a funnel, because of banging into it their neighbors, they develop a vortex spin that is hard to stop. Because they're all working together, just like water in a river. And therefore, but you know when you get the headset, right? When you finally find the extension cord, you know, end, and you learn how to pull that one thing out and the other thing, and it just starts unraveling beautifully, right? I'm just thinking that we could take matter and unravel it if we knew how it worked, how those ethereal winds, you know, do their thing, and then you could remetabolize it into something else. You talk about room temperature fusion, no problem, man, no problem at all. But anyway, back to dreams. What's interesting about the settings of our dreams is that it dictates what's capable of happening. You know, if you were wandering around a backlot of Paramount or Warner Brothers or Fox, you get to go in and out of different eras of time. It's actually pretty amazing. It's literally one of the most enchanting things you can do for the very first time in your life. And so if you walk back to the ancient, you know, New York sets, the brownstones back there, you could start seeing the Twilight Zones that were filmed back there. And you could imagine a script that could be told in that environment. If you walked into a Star Wars set, you know, depends on what era you're in. Are you in Luke Skywalker's era? Are you in the prequel? Or, you know, way out sequel? Well, you could start telling that story. Little kids would start make-believing that story. And so the environments that are created for us to have dreams are profound, and they really dictate the spectrum of what we can do. Now, a lot of you will have experienced this thing where, and it's fascinating because the Egyptians did something really cool. They did many things that were cool, but one of the coolest things they did was they really made door jams an ornate thing. Door jams typically have over them Ra holding the sun and then the big wings that go out over the top of a doorway. At least of anything that's a temple or what may be called a hospital by some of the locals. They really thought that going through a door was a symbolic thing that was very significant. And so when you're in a dream, how many times have you been in environment A and for whatever reason, your action in your movie that is your dream demands that you leave and go someplace else. And as soon as you go through the door jam, the set changes. The environment changes. Suddenly you're outside. But a minute ago, you went through that door jam, came back in and out, and you were still inside. One of the cartoony, interesting dreams I've had at least half a dozen times in my lifetime, such that I can remember it, was that, you know, being from Kansas, we're known for Tornado Alley. When actually, Oklahoma is really the one that has the massive F5s roll through there. Part of the romance of Kansas being a tornado world is because of the Wizard of Oz. But it's plains, you know, it's really flat land, especially compared to most of the world. And so, hey, cold front hits a warm front, they roll, it rains on half of the roll, and it tips the thing up, and you got a tornado, and here it goes. And so I've had these dreams where I will be looking out over the landscape of Kansas, and there are like dozens and dozens of funnel tornadoes that are picking up debris. They're not really hitting any towns or, you know, there's no sparks on the ground. It's not that realistic, but the tornadoes sort of look like caricatures of tornadoes, but they're photoreal. And what's funny is that the clouds are sort of lighting each one of the tornadoes separately, and it's got this sepia tone to it, very much like Wizard of Oz. And I've had that dream a couple times where I'm with a group of friends that feel like family and friends together. And we go out and we're looking at these things. And of course, in reality, they would be devastatingly deadly. And there would be that, you know, seeing half a dozen of them or for my dreams, it's probably a dozen and a half. They are, in the dream, it feels like they're an odyssey for me to watch. My brain won't let them come close. So they're just out there. It's interesting. Because video games, creating all of these interesting fictitious buildings, these fictional locations where you might play a shooter game, you know, we're all doing sort of a death match or a team thing. You, as a player, you've now experienced, and I've experienced, tons of these environments that don't exist. Duke Nukem's worlds, all the Dooms, all the Quakes, and countless other games, Prey. And so that starts to curb how my brain will build a building and then allow me to go through it. About 2 days ago, I was tasked with going from like one place to another within this building. And it's carpeted and it's nice, but it's sort of that British interior design where everything has got a beautiful sort of super modern white finish. When I was over there in 2000, it had a lot of red and white together with black trim, and it was very interesting. It was beautiful stuff. Like, you want to go to a closet, there's no door, there's no handle on the outside, there's no hardware, you just push on it, and it's got a little, you know, a little relief magnet. It was cool. And so I was going through this building. It felt very European. And at one point, I had found myself in some weird mezzanine of the construction where I was sort of in a place that I wasn't supposed to be. And it had these interesting sort of grills, like these hexagonal grills on the wall, like a Lamborghini grill or something. It was all silver. And I'm just in there and I'm crawling around, you know, and I'm thinking, oh God, I got myself in the wrong place. I got to get the hell out of here. And of course, my brain immediately creates a hatch that opens up. It's like a Doctor Who episode where I'm always safe. I can always find a place to get out and I'm never really that scared. Just a little bit of caution. And so I can feel my brain crafting this world as I experience it because I want to get out of here. Oh, here's the door. Boom. I get out of there. And I don't have to crawl. It's not like some Jeffrey's tube. I just find a thing, kind of pull myself up, and I don't really have a body. So I am getting where I need to go. But then there are rules for outside versus inside. I will have homes that are sort of beach houses. There's this house that I do not believe I've ever actually been in real life, but I continually dream of it. And it's like a beach house that you might find down the street where it has a garage underneath one end. And then the loft, sort of the living room is above the garage, and the way that the soil's pushed up, you know, the garage is, the whole house is actually up on a little rise of soil. And then of course the garage is underneath and you just drive right in to your driveway and you walk up the way. There's a lot of houses like this around here. But I've had this house that constantly appears. And it's very, you know, magic hour to dusk to night. It's never morning. And it's kind of just got sofas and beds everywhere. But I've had this species of dream that is actually pretty phenomenal and pretty different. Well, that helicopter just has one red light on it. Weird. That thing is hauling ass. Wow. But I've had a reoccurring set of dreams, which the environment changes just a little bit. And I'll be in a city. And it'll have skyscrapers around me, and I will look up in the sky, and it sort of turns into like an Independence Day, where a bunch of UFOs start flying in, and they're huge. They're not big round disks flying over the entire city. They're ships, like out of a video game. And I've had varying levels of this where I can't tell what year I'm in. I can't tell if what I'm about to see is absolutely 2019 crazy wild, or if I'm in some 100 years from now where this thing I'm about to witness makes sense. For any of you that have seen the movie Valerian, the first 5-10 minutes of Valerian, you will know that they have that scene where all these ships fall out of the sky and crash into the ground. Lots of things have done it, especially video game cutscenes. But I've had about half a dozen of those where I'm looking up in the sky. And what ends up happening is there are a bunch of UFOs coming in. And essentially, they're very intelligent looking. They're not saucers. They're not white disks. They're very intelligent looking spaceships, okay? And then out of nowhere, as if mankind, you know, the ruling class or whatever, has hidden the fleet of spaceships of their own, they come out of nowhere. And they start doing a battle up in the sky. And I've had this happen in sort of daytime haziness about 10 to 20 years ago. But more recently, it has been this sort of, I don't know, it's like that video game Destiny. Very beautiful night scenes. And, you know, these things come down and they take out buildings and they explode. And I'm just sort of sitting in some sort of like derelict parking lot or something that's big enough that I don't fear for my life. I'm just literally just looking at the details of the ships and watching the battle occur. It's just amazing. Whereas in real life, I don't know exactly what I would do because there's no sense of comfort, because if one of these things comes down, you're going to die if you're in the building. You're going to die if you're outside the building. So just hope they don't hit you. But I had this dream, and I'll just share a couple of this, a little bit of this technology with you, just in case you find it interesting to listen to. I was I've had a couple dreams now, two dreams where I felt like, one, I felt like I was literally in the future and it was super duper real. I've described this once before, but I'll see if I can't do a better job this time around. It was broad daylight. It was in sort of a lush sort of green area. It wasn't like a forest, but it was dense with kind of trees that were very, very like, like Zelda 1, like the Zelda series way back in the day when the trees are kind of puffy and they're all close together, something like that. We don't have a lot of those places in the United States where I am. But there was this beautiful gazebo thing that was sort of super futuristic. It looked like elven architecture, but it wasn't, of course. And so there was this sofa, this really long, thin sofa with a back on it. But instead of having the arms actually went the other way and went down. And just before it hit the ground, it would stop, you know, and it's all rounded off and very beautiful. I didn't go up and sit down on it, but I remember looking at it and I'm looking over and there was this sort of clubhouse sort of thing. But out in front of the clubhouse, I looked down and I'm looking at this sort of light purple, maybe like normal purple, sort of landing bay thing. It's sort of like a, instead of having concrete, it's just shiny stuff. And then on it are these light blue steel inlays where these ships were coming in and landing, and it was getting picked up. There was landing, it's like little landing feet would come out and stick into these crevices like an amusement park ride, you know, where it's grabbing it and taking it along. And it would simply just take the car away. People would hop out. The whole thing is kind of turning at the same time, just like a Disneyland ride, so you can kind of hop out, and you're all moving at the same time, and you're expected to get out before the car goes into the garage or whatever the hell the place was going. And so that happened 10 years ago. It was stunning. And the reason why I mentioned that is there was an upgrade to it recently in my dream that was really cool. I'm watching a very similar looking place, except it's at nighttime. And I'm in a city. And I get the sense that behind me was sort of like the nightclub. And these ships were coming in, luxury ships, not too large, about the size of a car. But their designs were just wild looking. But now here's the catch. The ships were made out of strips of metal. About, I'd say, 2 inches, sort of a round rectangle rods. And they all sort of came together to build the car. A ton of them. And it sort of held together maybe magnetically or something. And so here's the cool part. I'm looking down at the ground, which have these interesting slats in the ground. A little bit different than the other ones and different color scheme. This is more orangish purple. Like there's orange highlights inside purple. It was cool. So the little ducks were lined with like this beautiful tangerine sort of lit orange with this kind of deep purple because it wasn't lit very well at night. And I'm watching these people land, and here's what was happening. The vehicle would land, and as it starts landing, it starts unraveling the vehicle. Out of these, made of these slats that go from the nose to the trunk. And so these things were unraveling and going into the slats in the ground, and the whole vehicle would disappear into the ground, leaving the passengers standing up. And so they were able to just walk into the nightclub. It was awesome. Now here's the thing. I'm not thinking about this stuff during the day. How the hell is my brain coming up with this amazing engineering? This, you know, for this day and age, an impossible engineering task. It's not impossible, but geez, it would be amazing. And these vehicles look gorgeous. I mean, they were definitely, you got the sense of rich people getting out of these things. Dressed to the hilt, ready to go. And I get the sense that it was like, if you took a kid out of like 1850, and you took them up to, geez, who knows, 1985 or whatever. And you take them and you put them at the end of a runway. That's a nice, safe location, far enough away. Give him a little headgear so he doesn't hurt his ears or whatever. And he could just sit there and watch planes take off all day long. to us, we get bored after the first takeoff. We see this stuff all the time. No big deal. But I'm sitting there watching these cars land and unravel, and I'm just like, oh my God, that is so bitchin'. That is so cool. I could have sat there all day watching that. I probably watched 3 or 4 cars disappear before I was like, where the hell am I? You know? So one of the reasons why I'm making this episode is to sort of communicate what I'm doing to have a different experience over and over and over again within suites of dreams. So again, I might keep an environment for a week to 2 weeks. And what ends up happening for me is that the themes inside these locations, I hate to admit it, but they sort of get dark. It's like the people get kind of cantankerous with me, and they're almost saying, you know, without saying anything, it's almost the feeling is like, well, I'm not welcome here right now anymore. It's time for me to change. And that could be me infecting it more than them infecting it. Who knows? Of course, I'm talking about them as if they really exist. My dreams are typically dreams of camaraderie. Whatever dream people are there, we're friends and we hang out and we have a good time, and there's rarely, you know, anyone trying to cause problems. I have dreams where I remember exactly where I was. One of them is of my hometown, which if you go to that address I showed you, just go down on Main Street and take a look around. Put the little dude down on the ground, take a look around. That's my hometown, man. But there's one where my town is sort of in the future, at least 100 years in the future. Someone has taken the downtown and preserved the storefronts in the front, but they've, behind those buildings, they've built up 2-story, 3-story, 4-story, beautiful connecting buildings. So it's kind of like this walk-along mall that you can do at whatever story you want to do. And they built like plazas behind there, so you can really have a good time. I want to go back to that one. I've been there 2 or 3 times, and it's more, I actually was able to go up into the buildings on one particular visit, and then the other ones, I'm just spectating at it, you know, going, oh, there it is, you know. But now, I mentioned in my episode, does space exist? This weird phenomenon, and we've had more people report in that they have these dreams, but every time I ask them to elaborate, only a couple of them actually ever elaborate, where, again, the weird thing is that it's not weird for us. Let's just say you live in America your whole life, or you live in Europe your whole life. You've never been to America. We've never been to where you live. It's not at all surprising that I don't dream about being in places I've never been before. Okay. I will play a video game, though. Like, again, back in the Quake days, especially Quake days, I would play a video game for 14 hours straight at EA with my buddies over a weekend, and I would dream being there. I don't know how accurate it is, but it means I'm at that location, I'm running around. And so I have friends that have been in the visual effects business for 25 years. They have more gold statues than you can shake a stick at, or your hand. Okay, they have never dreamed of being in space. So they'll work on sagas, you know, like the Battlestar Galactica saga, all the Star Treks, all these movies, spaceship. My old co-host, he still does that all the time. He has laid cameras inside of virtual spaceships and flown them around and figured out where the shot is for 20 years straight, and has never had a dream once, working sometimes 16-hour days. Never once had a dream of being in one of these spaceships. And so he goes to work after I spring the episode on him. And he asked all of his friends at work, have any of you guys had a dream of being in space? And they all just looked at each other and were like, no. Holy shit, how's that even possible? And some guys are like, I dream lucid dreams and all this other crap, right? Nothing. Again, some of you said you've done it. Usually, the explanations are extremely abstract. What's interesting is the places that I dream of, I've never been. In most cases, I've never been there. So my brain is synthesizing stuff together. Because we can't take a screen capture of our dreams and then analyze it against our life history, you know, it may be taking something from your hometown and mixing it with an airport you were at versus a mall you were at versus something you saw on television. The amount of times I have dreamed of collaborating with a group of people in an office is a lot. It's very fun. It's like we're doing something interesting, which is really cool. What I'm trying to do, I think, over time here for myself and hopefully with you guys, is to get you to realize that perhaps even if you can't directly grab the stick shift and the steering wheel to your dreams, that you can potentially affect your dreams by, that maybe there's some things you can do just prior to going to bed to sort of take on the attitude of what you actually want to experience when you go to sleep. How many people have nightmares, and potentially the reason why they replicate themselves night after night is as you're going to bed, you are fearing it, and therefore it becomes what your thought is as you go to bed. So it's important that you think of something wonderful, you know, like Happy Gilmore. Think of your happy place. Think of a dream you've had that you love. Think of something in real life that you love. I find the one thing that makes me really tired, and I think I said this once before, way back when I used to put the mic up against my face, destroy the soundtrack. I'm on episode 41. As of the recording of this episode, I'm on episode 41 of season 1, and I'm remastering. And there's just digital distortion I just can't get rid of. It's crazy because I put the mic against my mouth. I apologize, folks. But I think that you can, if you go to bed and you close your eyes and you think of realistic things in your life, you can keep yourself up all night and give yourself little anxiety attacks, right? Now, hopefully your life is going great and what you're thinking about in your real life is just wonderful. I find that thinking of fictional worlds puts me to sleep beautifully. When I first saw, like, Roger the Rabbit, I, God bless the makers of that film, and Charles Fleischer, I think is his name, does an amazing job. I don't like that film. I don't like the way it feels. I like the guy that plays the Mario Brothers dude. That dude is his sidekick. I like him as an actor. I like other things that he's done. I just don't like that movie. It just doesn't feel right to me. There's something weird about it. But I did use that dream after, or sorry, use that movie after that dream came, or God damn it, I used that movie after it came out to think about the environments and sort of being, because there's a point where I think they go into the cartoon world 100%, I believe, towards the end. And I think I thought about going into that world. It was the very first time it was successful for me where trying to hang on to complete fiction in my mind consciously, which is essentially us, me, thinking about or putting in the effort to do what my dreams do automatically. I was synthesizing the world in my mind, which is utterly exhausting. Okay, I look at a car. What's it look like? My brain automatically, as I'm going to bed, has to manifest some car design in cartoon form, right? The bounce and squash animation techniques and all that good stuff. It was exhausting, and so I went to bed. And so after that, I started just thinking about scenarios that were sort of fantasy scenarios. What I don't know is the geography of our dreams, does it reveal something about us? I have to assume it does. I have to assume there's a spectrum of your imagination, which is odd, because when you lose consciousness, you're in an absolute make-believe world. So why is there any constraint on what we think? Why can't I think about space? You know, again, I have seen every single Star Trek episode between 1 and 5 times. One for the ones I don't really like. But I think I've seen every one of them 2 times at least, minimum. And why, when I binge watch Star Trek while I'm coding or I'm doing something else, like when I have my TV in front of me, like 10 feet away, and I got my laptop and I'm just doing my thing. Why am I not dreaming of that? It's a fond location. You realize how absolutely ecstatic I would be to wake up on any one of the Enterprise ships with that crew around me, go to 10 Ford, get a drink from Whoopi Goldberg before she joined The View, talk with Data a little bit, play a little game of that 3D chess thing with Data, even if there's no rules that I can understand. Hang out with Captain Kirk and Spock, go down to a planet, chill out a little bit. None of that. I've never had a dream of being on a Star Destroyer in a Millennium Falcon. How many times have we seen those movies? I've seen Blade Runner. I don't know. I think we exaggerate some of the numbers, but I'm going to say 60 to 100 times, somewhere in there. Never had a dream of being in that world, ever. And what's weird is I have dreams of cities all the time. I'm running around inside of a city. I'm driving inside of a city. I'm in buildings, but I've never been to the Tyrell Corporation. I've never been in, what is it, Gaffey's nightclub. Deckard's apartment. Why is there this weird limiter? It's not my lack of imagination. I guarantee you that. The other thing that doesn't seem to occur is I don't seem to leave my period of time except to perhaps go forward in time in the future. I don't find myself in the 1800s. I would love to have a dream of being in Deadwood, South Dakota, going to the gym saloon and meet Swergen. I mean, come on. To go into a King Arthur 1981 Excalibur movie castle and see what it looks like. Never happens. Go to Rome back in the day, man. Colosseum's bumping. See a chariot race. Eat a rat on a stick. What's causing this limitation? I've been in, you know, I'm no longer in it, but I used to be in the video game business forever. Surrounded by imagination. You know, it was my job to come up with the next best thing all the time with a huge group of other people. And other than the building type simulations, again, like the Dune, Quake stuff, it's weird to think that I've probably played World of Warcraft. I can't stand the game anymore. I mean, I can't stand the game anymore. I just turned it on for a month using gold. I logged in twice and was like, this is awful now. They've completely destroyed that game. But I have played it for, geez, combining all the characters, almost a whole year straight. At least 200 days at least. I forgot. I think last time I did it was several years ago, and it was like my main character I played for 144 days. Scary. Never had a dream of being in Orgrimmar. How awesome would that be, looking around going, holy crap, this place is real. What's really cool is I've seen some comments on the Facebook page where you guys are hip to frontiers that are right in front of our face that we have a chance to parse. I think that, and you know, here we are, we're just some, or about 4,000 people on YouTube. You know, people have thought of almost everything, and they've gone down these paths and books and things, and we just haven't seen their research, and so we're joining everyone's club sort of through our own little research programs. But dreams are huge. There's been a tremendous amount of exploration into dreams, and we're still at sort of ground zero. But I will tell you this, out of all the books that I have consumed on the subject matter, everyone gets really... seemingly, and again, if you guys have read books and seen things that touch on the stuff I'm talking about and have talked about, please point me in that direction. But we seem to get caught up in the mundane, just like the moon missions. In this channel alone, we have pioneered things that no one else has thought about. We have moved to level 2 or 3 of the moon mission hoax evidence pool. more Occam's razors proofs that we didn't go. Okay. In dreams, in my research, you know, Freud had very sort of, and I respect him for it, you know, he just made decisions about what things meant. Well, that means this. Bam. Okay. There's something about, and I don't know if, I didn't really mention this in What Are Facts episode. I probably should have. I mentioned it in other episodes, but there was this point where, there is a point, I think, in most people's lives where you do get tired of tiptoeing around things that seem empirical, like proven. They happen too much. Well, you may not completely understand what it is, but that happens, you know. I used to try to talk to you guys way back in season one, definitely in MK Ultra Radio, in a way that was like, I would use those terms, like, you know, loosely, you know, like allegedly and supposedly and that kind of stuff. And I still hold that for, you know, drastic accusations towards other human beings, of which I have no proof. But there's a point where you just start throwing it out. You just start throwing out, you know, Einstein stuff. You just got to throw it out. You know, the guy barely contributed to reality, and he's got the, you know, this badge on him that he's like the absolute pinnacle of intelligence in this universe, right? It just gets, you get tired of it. So at one point, I understand Freud just throwing it down. But anyway, most of the books that I have bought, and I want to say that the only one that's different is the ones that where you start reading the Freudian psychology, which again, other divisions of psychology or psychiatry say that he's completely full of shit. But you will get to a point where you read just about dream translations. People got it all figured out. And it's really like tarot card reading. Like Prince said in Under the Cherry Moon, you just tell people what they want to hear and they'll make it happen. I've never heard anyone in this planet say, either in book, magazine, internet, that we don't have bodies when we dream. That it's all an illusion. That as we join a dream, there's a stage of realization. It's almost like teleporting into the Tron environment back in 1982. Your body comes naked and then the clothes res on top of you, and then something, or your light cycle reses in your hand. It's like 1, 2, 3, and these things happen, which is why you end up naked in your dreams, because the you res naked in a room and you realize before your clothes get added inside your consciousness. Again, you don't have a body, but you feel like you do. You're focusing on the fact that people are seeing you nude, and sometimes that'll create an arrested development in the process, and you will stay naked. And then you're traumatized if you're not used to being naked around strangers, right? I have at least one friend who said that he would have a lot of sex in his dreams, and that it became a problem for him as a young man, if you could just read between the lines there. I never have. I mean, I have sexual encounters very rarely in dreams, and it's so short-lived. You know, it happens for seconds before my brain just starts, I don't know, maybe I get so blown away by the fact it's occurring that my brain gets nervous or something, that it's going to go away because it's so great, and then my brain, you know, some asshole always walks in the room. That's the thing. It's just like those movies or TV shows when two people are about to kiss and you've been waiting, you know, 5 seasons for it. It's like Daphne and Niles kissing for the first time in Frasier. You've been waiting and waiting and waiting for their lips to touch, and finally you get your wish, you know, eventually. What a great show that is. We're trying to be enlightened with what we can deduce about dreams, right? And so, in my mind, enlightenment in one metaphor is to climb higher and see more because you have more elevation. It's a crude metaphor, but it's there. And so for me, the scaffolding is based on all these little things that we have put into this dream sequence of episodes in this show. And just so you guys know, I don't mention this often enough. Every single video should be in a playlist somewhere. If it's not, I have made a mistake in uploading the video. But I have a dream playlist. If you're interested in this kind of stuff, go back to the dream playlist and just cruise through them. But as always, this is our new virtual university. I need your participation. I need not only your experiences communicated, and, you know, man, we got some awesome comments in the dream videos, but I need your deduction. I need your intelligence. Even if I'm mentioning something that you've never had, pretend to be my psychiatrist or my psychologist. Pretend to be my scientist. You know, you're working, you know, I'm your patient. And I want you to think it through. Really think it through. Try to come up with an interesting, like we say in the screenplay business, crack it. Crack the hook. Crack the reason why this movie is so good. That little twist, you know. You know, a fantasy hope of mine would be we crack something in this series between all of us. And then the subscribers of this show, we get to live an enlightened life and we get to teach others what we've learned. Something tangible, something that everyone can do. It's like, I keep saying, and by the way, guys, I'm going to digress for 1 second. For some of you, bear with me, okay, because I know you hate this subject to death. I'm at a meeting the other day with a good friend of mine, super guy, and he turns to me. He has no idea this show exists, by the way. I won't tell him. I don't know what he would think about that. He turns to me and he goes, we're at lunch in this beautiful Rose Cafe in Santa Monica. It's very famous. And he says, what do you think about this whole flat earth thing? And I'm sitting there looking at him like, did you just say that? And of course, I can't go, yeah, I've done a shit ton of episodes on it, man. It's just funny. Eventually, I'll tell him, I'll share the show with him. I need to know a little bit more about how he, you know, whether he can digest this kind of stuff. I did throw some moon stuff at him. He was very receptive, but you know, we went through the flat earth thing, and the reason why I'm mentioning it in this episode is very important, okay? We have this claim by flat earth pilots. Again, you've heard this a million times if you've heard the episodes, but I'm carry this back to this episode, okay? That the gyroscope doesn't turn no matter if you travel halfway around the world on a, you know, on a, was it latitude, right? Vertical, up and down, north, south. It's supposed to stay perpendicular to wherever you start from. So again, London to Cairo should be kind of sideways by the time you get to Cairo because you've flown halfway around the world. Okay. So you hear this claim a bunch, but no one's ever taken the photograph that I know of. No one's ever filmed it with a video camera. With their phone, for God's sakes, right? Just get one of those suction cup things and put it right there on the dashboard of your jet and just film it. Someone's got to be have a G5, right? So it's not like you're going to be, you know, violating some FAA law or whatever they call it in Europe. But people fly from San Francisco to Mexico City all the time. So take a picture of it. Show me it doesn't change. So the same thing applies for dreams. If, you know, what I say is, if that was that easy, then everyone could film it and every pilot's going to go, oh my God, we're on a flat disc. What the, fudge? What I have found with dreams and talking to people since I started this show, and I never had any of these epiphanies before I made this show, and trying to make episodes and trying to come up with interesting things that interest me, to hopefully interest you, I have scraped out of my own consciousness, my own realization, these other things, you know. Try it. You know, go up to one of your friends who you're close with, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your parent, whatever, your buddy, your bestie, and just say, you know, do you dream? Yeah, every once in a while. Do you ever realize we don't really have bodies when we dream? What? Yeah, we don't really have any bodies when we dream. Next time you dream, see if you can get into your body. Like, feel it and try to pick up a pen and write something. As soon as you got to use your fingers, that symbolic thing that you call your body in a dream starts to become jelly. It's a wet noodle. Now, the other thing you might do, and I'm really not a self-promoter, you know, for this show. I feel like it needs to earn your viewership by engaging you. And again, some people don't watch Black and White, and some dude sitting on his patio smoking cigars, it just bothers them. I understand. I totally get it. But if they are interested, point them at the show and point them at the Dream playlist and say, if you dig Dreams and you want to get into this, you might want to watch this guy, and then just get it, because we're trying to get as many minds into the deciphering of dreams, in my opinion, as absolutely possible. And, you know, we're blessed to have some folks, and I don't remember your names right offhand, but we have a couple folks that are baby boomers. One gentleman identified himself as a 71-year-old viewer. The amount of compliment I feel by having someone 71 years old watching this show is beyond description. It's awesome that, you know, a 49-year-old guy could keep anyone who's 71, you know, interested in something. I have to say, I can't imagine watching someone 30 years younger than me at this point making a video. It happens all the time, but I appreciate the viewership. So any of you that are, say, over 50 and even further out, the further out you are, your opinion is actually really interesting to me, because you've had more experience. You've had more incidental conversations, more specific conversations. Potentially you've had millions of more dreams than any one of us have had who are younger. And so your insight is pure wisdom. How do you dream? What are the best dreams you've ever had? Some of you have talked about dreams that then spilled over into your real life. Almost like a premonition. That's interesting. I can't say I've had a single dream that turned into a premonition. I can say that I've had, my daydreams are the ones where I have the weird future prediction dreams. I mean, or daydreams, you know, like I said, 9/11 and that kind of stuff. There's something going on. There's something going on, and I don't know. I have this distinct feeling, and we're going to kind of divert away from the dream thing to close this thing off, so hopefully you guys don't mind. I have this, this is not an epiphany of any, you know, unique magnitude, but the idea is that I believe thoroughly that the more I open my mind, especially to create episodes, you know, it used to be that I just lived my life and I would analyze things and write them into notebooks, like I've said previously. Now, I live my life, I analyze it, and then I make episodes. And then I more thoroughly analyze the information because I'm talking for an hour plus. By the way, I didn't realize it, but my first two-hour episode was episode 40, way back in the day. I thought it was 26, which got pretty close to 2 hours for the moon mission. But what I want to get happening with this, the subs on this show, is that it's almost as if what I want to communicate with you guys is that if you're having an experience remotely like mine in ingesting these episodes, and again, one of you came in and you gave me a beautiful compliment. You said, look, I've watched 200 shows. I really like them. I don't always agree with what you say. My hope is that I've engaged your belief system even more so that you believe what you believe even more. That's a huge benefit to your life, you know. But by discussing these things in the most minute detail, in some cases, we're not only becoming perhaps enlightened between us because we're communicating with each other and everybody can see everybody else's comments. And again, if you go into Facebook's a little bit different. Facebook's sort of we just analyze things. We analyze everything. It's such a fantastic group. I mean, I belong to, I'll put it this way, over the, 11 years or 10 years? I mean, maybe it's 10 years. 10 years I've been on Facebook. I can't even believe I said that. You know, I've belonged to groups, and there are people, you know, I might admire, something like Buckethead's group's pretty cool. But it's just not riveting. You know, the comments are kind of, you know, one in every 10 is interesting. On our Facebook page, it's interesting all day long. By the way, one of our listeners gave me I just want to mention this because I didn't let it go through, which is like, I don't even know. The only comments I don't let go through on Facebook are ones where someone's attached to content that is no longer visible, probably because it's behind another locked group and you can't share between locked groups, you know. Anyway, someone let me posted to the group a beautiful model walking down a runway, and her name is Sierra Sky, SKYE, I think. Very beautiful girl. She was just walking, being beautiful, and he just shared it. I was like, hey, man, it's good content. I can't say I didn't share it with a few friends of mine, but I can't put it on the Facebook page because it's just going to draw a lot of criticism. So, dude, it was a good post, but I just couldn't let it on the group, okay? But otherwise, we're pretty out there. But what I want to have happen, and what I'm trying to get out of my mouth here, is I want every single one of us, at least in a single dimension, if not as many as you can come up with, to start seeing more in this reality that you previously didn't see before we started having these discussions. And then, dear God, please bring it back to us and share it. If you can, make a video about it. Post it on your own little channel. Post it directly to Facebook and share it with the group. Dave, who's one of our moderators for the Facebook page, he takes these incredible pictures of stars zoomed up with his camera. And again, I mentioned it on several episodes. The phenomenon of what we're seeing is really odd. Like stars with mohawks on them. It looks like balls on some sort of tapestry that have a constant stream of plasma going over them. And again, he's shaking the camera left and right. The atmosphere is wiggling, and these mohawks stay perfectly in place. So it can't be the analog to digital sensor in the camera, and it can't be the atmosphere, because those would keep that mohawk swimming all over the place. And you see those videos too every once in a while. But the ones with the mohawks, he seems to get quite frequently. It's a huge deal. But we're kind of looking at like, hey, whatever, it's what one looks like through that camera. Someone took a picture of the moon really close up, and he just goes, man, I can't believe this thing is, you know, 200 and he said 280,000 miles, but even if it's only 237,000 miles away at its average distance, he's seeing the detail on the moon. He's going, how could this thing be so far away? And I get such amazing detailed shots of it with just a home camera. Food for thought, man. So I hope you're having the same experience I'm having, that you're starting to open your mind more and more and more from all these different subjects we cover, from just how we see information being perceived here on local planet Earth, to how you might perceive us in a matrix where nothing matters. You know, flat Earth people are correct, the heliocentric globe people are correct, because you're in a matrix. You ever wonder how someone can have a drastically different opinion than yours, as if they're living in a completely different world of facts? For them, Lee Harvey Oswald did it all. But then you have the Mandela effect. You know, so one of the commenters posted on YouTube, I think it was some Chicago Tribune or something like that, Chicago newspaper or something like that, where several years ago, they posted a full article about Eli Whitney, who created the cotton gin, who was a black guy. And it was like a celebrating Black History Month sort of article. The guy's white. He's from Yale now. He's different. Is time organic? And if you fold it back into dreams, what if the dynamic nature of our dreams, where you can walk through a door jam from point A into point B, and they go back at the point A and it's changed ever so slightly? What if that is the absolute pure nature of our consciousness living in a consciousness reality rendering engine? And this reality, for whatever reason, we're living in the soup of ether, so it implies more restrictions and more constraints on our reality, that we feel like we're locked into the real one, and we go to sleep, it's the fake one. I don't know how we can call dreams fake. They happen. You know, there's obviously dream clinics say that you dream every single night. And of course, their science is not matching observable reality, which is, you know, you have all your dreams in a split second when you're in REM state. And then as soon as you go to your delta and beta phases, you're off into the theta stage or something like that, right? You're completely out cold, and you essentially have a flat line. And the way, because I have real-time dreams all night long, I mean, every single night I will dream for hours. I'll wake up. Sometimes I have to go pee. Sometimes look at my phone. And usually if I look at my phone, I'm disturbing and destroying the dream. But if I just have to go up and go to the restroom for a split second, come back into my dream, I got right back into the reality, right where I was. An hour passes in the dream, feels like an hour. I wake up, an hour is gone. In fact, I know what time it is because I will literally go, well, I feel like I was in that dream for about an hour, and it was about 7:20 when I woke up, and now it's 8:20. Boom. There's a lot of humans that can wake up on the exact time that they need to wake up to go to work. They never set an alarm. How are they able to do that? There's a little autistic processor in the background watching the clock. Something's going on. But in closing, let me just throw out you this little analogy. Probably not an analogy, sorry. It's more of an example of what maybe the dream clinics are seeing. So what do they see? You go into REM state, and if you look at the eyelids of the person in REM state, their eyes are swimming underneath their eyelids. I've seen this happen with plenty of girlfriends of mine. Okay. And then they say your brain waves go pretty flat. And they measure the brain wave, and that's where they get theta and delta, and that's where you start to... They study how you feel when you wake up, and they say, oh, there's people who get down into that deeper state of consciousness. They seem to wake up feeling like they stayed in a Motel Inn, right? Or Hotel Inn, Holiday Inn, whatever it is. All right. What if we are traveling from point A to point B, this reality to the other reality? The REM state is merely the door jam. You are transitioning through the twilight zone into your dream state. Your eyeballs are swimming like crazy because you are, I mean, why would our eyeballs swim? That's the weirdest thing. Why do they swim? Do we sit around swimming our eyeballs in this reality? No. What would that actually do if your eyeballs were moving around really fast? It would impair your vision. Well, there's a big difference when you're dreaming. You're not using your eyeballs anymore, are you? If anything, you're crawling through your pineal gland out into the universe to have a good time. Perhaps the moment that our eyes go still and our body in this world goes into delta or theta, I believe theta is the correct deep state. I apologize if I had that wrong. It's been a while since I studied that. But it's us leaving. And we're simply out there. And our bodies are in super deep sleep because the consciousness is no longer there burdening it with function. It's in its autonomic phase. It's simply sleeping. People who take the dream molecule, DMT, they will often their body here on Earth goes into that sort of bath salt feral state where some of people freak out. You've seen these shots, man. They freak out and they're spazzing all over their living rooms or what have you. And it could be that because DMT allows you to inject yourself into the universe just like a dream, it's a real place. You always meet the same people. I mean, it's very interesting. DMT trips, I've never taken one, but man, the descriptions are phenomenal. See my other episodes for that. I seriously believe they have left their bodies, and their bodies are merely in an autonomic phase where pure instinct is trying to make sense of reality, but because consciousness is such a huge part of this combination between your soul and your body, which forges the mind into existence, the mind is all of a sudden left deflated, and you are in pure caveman feral state. Bath salts, same thing. Who knows what's going on when you take bath salts? Jesus, don't ever do that. But you see these videos all over the web where people say zombies really exist, and these poor police precincts are having to deal with these kids who've taken horrible drugs. They've snorted whippets. They've done all kinds of stuff to just shut their brain off, and they're sitting there trying to walk, trying to talk. They're rolling around the ground. They're just growling like animals. It's a horrid concept to be stuck in such a state, wouldn't it? Anyway, I think you feel me. It's Tuesday morning, really early. It's about 2:15 in the morning. Your weather update is that tomorrow for California is going to be the coldest day we're going to have all month. It might be the last coldest day before winter comes. It's going to be really low 60s, so the wind's blowing right now, ushering in that cold air. So I'm going to get inside and get warm. Anyhow, if you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, there's a few things up there. I've been forgetting to mention this other link that's on the website. So, obviously, for those of you who've heard this a million times, if you're coming to me on YouTube, you can put it in podcast, listen to it in your car, when you're walking around, when you're at work. Just go up there and you can get the other link to the RSS feed. There's a link to the Locke Facebook group I just mentioned. There's a Twitter account in case you like to get your feed that way. And there's a Patreon page, but there's a new link up there that's for the new Season 1 channel. And the reason why I created a separate channel is that I don't want to have 100 videos randomly dropping throughout the month, the couple months it's going to take me to do this, that are all 1 through 100. So what's going to be is that 1 through 100 is being remastered. For those of you who don't know what I'm doing, the reason why is that the audio levels were all over the place in Season 1. I used a lot of proprietary, you know, music from my iTunes, you know, like all kinds of rock and roll songs and all kinds of wild songs that happen to match the theme that I'm covering. The problem is that got the videos banned in Europe and banned on mobile devices and all kinds of other stupid banning they do. 15 seconds of a song, they think they own my whole video. Love to see that case in court. So I'm stripping all that out. So every once in a while, at the very beginning of a video, you'll hear a little bit of other music. That's because that's the remnant coming through, and I'm talking on top of it, unfortunately, because I cross-faded it. So I'm taking the bumper off the end, because a lot of the bumpers used to say MKUltra Radio. That's now all been, that will be all removed. I'm sending every soundtrack through Audition in Adobe. I'm balancing the vocal levels. I'm raising the vocal levels to match the music. I bought a new opening soundtrack and closing soundtrack for the series. So I'm also taking out all of the pauses, all of the cigar drags, throat clearing if I can find it, and throwing them back out there. I'm not watching them all the way through. I'm just doing a really quick cleanup. And I'm also dating all of them on the front because they're being debuted. Let's say someone finds that channel and it's like, what the hell? It tells them, look, this is on this date and that date. So you'll find out I was making tons of episodes day after day after day, kind of like I'm doing right now at night. So anyway, hope you dug the episode. Take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next episode. Over and out.